Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. Most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Simon Morato.
This is the official RTRFM podcast where we share our weekly edition of Movie Chat, as heard on Breakfast with Taylor every Friday morning, 7:30 a.m. on RTRFM 92.1. And we cover all releases. We cover cinema releases. We cover festival fare. We cover films that run for 3 hours. We cover films that run for 90 minutes. We do it all. And this is, I think, a solid episode of two, I guess, big movies in their own way, but both kind of have an interesting relationship, I think, with comic books, or just kind of the idea of the art of a comic book or graphic novels. So, yeah, what movies are we checking out in this episode?
Yeah, well, I'll be taking a look at Flea, which is a triple Oscar-nominated documentary animated film from Denmark about an asylum seeker that's been realized in this really interesting fashion. And I love how you say, yeah, it's got maybe some inspiration from the world of comics. But that's the second movie we look at today, because people are saying, what? There's a massive blockbuster out there. Don't you talk about that one? Of course we do. Tristan, what are we talking about?
Well, we throw in our 10 cents into the reaction to the big film of this week at the time of recording, which is The Batman, director Matt Reeves' take on the material of the DC Comics character with Robert Pattinson as Bruce Wayne / The Batman. I can't even think of how many people have played Batman, but it seems like it's like Hamlet. Every actor has to have a go. But it's very exciting that Robert Pattinson's part of it, and that it's taking a kind of very, well, they all take gritty, dark approaches, but more emphasis on the detective side of things and taking inspiration from films like Seven. So, yeah, I'm really excited to talk about it. So let's check out The Batman.
Fear is a tool. But when that light hits the sky, it's not just a call. It's a warning.
I've been trying to reach you.
Find the gun!
This is a powder keg, and Riddler's the match.
I can take care of myself.
If this continues, it won't be long before you've nothing left.
I don't care what happens to me.
It's only gonna get worse for you.
It is Friday morning, smack bang in the middle of breakfast. Nobody else that I would rather be speaking to than our Movie Squad. It is Tristan and Simon. Good morning, folks.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
Both of you making appearances outside of Movie Squad on Brekkie this week. Thank you for your contributions.
It's a takeover, Tristan. It's a slow white anting. No, it's a pleasure to speak with you any morning, Taylor. But always good to return to home base Friday, 7:30 a.m. To talk about the thing we're actually experts in, which is cinema.
Yeah, well, let's start with you, Tristan, and the expert take that you'll provide on The Batman.
Well, The Batman is the new Batman film that's out in cinemas now, and I feel like this character has had more iterations than Spider-Man in terms of the amount of reboots, reimaginings, new takes on this classic comic book character. Look, I mean, Simon, do you have a favorite version of Batman? Is there one that you always identify with, or do you kind of view them all the same?
Oh gosh, which one do I identify with? That's a loaded question.
Which
Batman? Look, I think you know, I always go back to Michael Keaton because it was the one I grew up with most significantly. Even though, and I haven't revisited those films in a while, I feel like they're the most disconnected from the Batman of the comics, you know. And I was definitely very invested in the sort of graphic novels, the sort of Long Halloween and Killing Joke era. And I was always a big fan of Mask of the Phantasm, which was the animated Batman film. And I forget the voice actor who's iconic there. But yeah, obviously, definitely some good Batmans and some not so good Batmans over the years.
How about you, Taylor? Do you have a good Batman, a bad Batman?
No, I think I am with Simon and Michael Keaton for sure. Adam West? Does that feel like appropriate to say? Is that just the one that people know the most? Well, I don't know.
Yeah, from the television show from the 1960s, which, I watched the movie a while back when Black Mirror Film Collective screened it last year and had a whale of a time, really enjoyed the campy version of it. But it's always interesting that since the 1989 big screen version, directed by Tim Burton with Michael Keaton, that was kind of like dark and gritty, and we're moving away from the one that everyone remembers. But then you look at that one now, and it's quite campy. And I think every version that pushes this kind of gritty, dark take can't help but dip into camp, even with this one, this new one, because I think it's always got to come around or try and convince you of the reality of someone who's dressed up as a bat, you know? So this one is directed by Matt Reeves. He made Cloverfield, some of the recent Planet of the Apes movies, and he takes a new approach to the material, which is kind of emphasizing the detective side of Batman. I mean, when Batman first started, it wasn't called Batman. It was part of Detective Comics, DC. That's where it all comes from. So, and we have Robert Pattinson now in the lead role, which is quite exciting, I think. I mean, the last Batman was Ben Affleck, and maybe that's one that Simon is referring to as a possibly bad Batman. But with Robert Pattinson, you know, people might associate him still with Twilight, but over the 10 or so years since that movie came out, he's been, you know, showing his bona fides by working with great auteurs and delivering great performances in films like Cosmopolis with David Cronenberg, The Safdie Brothers Good Time,
High Life?
High Life with Claire Denis. I mean, the idea of Robert Pattinson as Batman, did that interest you, Simon, as something that is kind of like, well, here we go, another Batman, but, oh, Robert Pattinson?
No, it was definitely intriguing to me because, yeah, you know, he was bad in Twilight, and the Twilight movies are bad, but they were also like almost 15 years ago, and he was like in his early 20s. Mm. And he has since then carved out this incredibly strange and diverse career in these indie films, these auteur-driven movies. And it was interesting. I took my dad to see The Batman the other night, and he was kind of blown away by Robert Pattinson's performance because he said, I've never seen him in anything. Like, I've known him as a celebrity for 10 plus years, but why would he have seen Twilight?
Hang on, your dad's not seen Twilight?
No, well, that's exactly the point. And then these other films that are, you know, under the radar or very, yeah, you know, not obscure, but challenging art films. So I think people will be reintroduced to Robert Pattinson, yeah, you know, on a mass level here. But I was definitely excited to see what this strange indie actor was going to do in the role.
And it's interesting as well, because he is like this celebrity, but like it's only in the past couple of years, like I think being involved in Tenet, that he's actually been like going back to big blockbuster mainstream cinema. So yeah, I think that's a very interesting point that for some, it might be going, oh, who's this guy again? You know, like, you know, but the movie takes us 2 years into the existence of Batman. He's a vigilante that's stalking the shadows of Gotham City. And he's a kind of an unofficial, he's not like the best friend of the police, he's an unofficial consultant with Jim Gordon, a detective played by Jeffrey Wright from Westworld. And but yeah, the other cops, they call him a freak. He is still kind of an outsider and someone who's viewed as a potential, you know, nuisance, and one who's, you know, two steps away from being arrested. But he also sees things that the other cops don't see. He's introduced to a crime scene and picks up certain details that the others are not following. And it's all to do with a crime that's initiated against the mayor by the Riddler, played by Paul Dano from There Will Be Blood. Basically, yeah, there are some grotesque murders that indicate larger conspiracies at play. There are riddles, hence the riddle, and Batman solemnly solving them. Into the mix is also a mob boss played by John Turturro, a club owner and criminal called Oswald, or Ozzy, who is basically the Penguin played by Colin Farrell. In another instance of a conventionally good-looking actor being kind of given prosthetics to look bizarre.
They did him so dirty.
Yeah, well, it's just like, I really enjoyed him in this movie, but I always just thinking of all the other like middle-aged, you know, character actors who don't look like Colin Farrell in their regular day going, hey, what, I could be the Penguin. What about me? Why does it have to be this this beauty who's just like de-beautified? Anyway, there's also Catwoman, Selena Kyle character, Zoe Kravitz, who we talked about last week in the Steven Soderbergh film Kimmy, plays a role now. And we can't forget Alfred, Bruce Wayne slash Batman's trusty servant, played here by Andy Serkis. So yeah, there's a lot of characters, there's a lot going on, and this is a lot of movie. This is getting close to 3 hours in length for a Batman movie, The Batman.
Not so, just getting close, it's 3 minutes shy of an hour.
That's a very good point. And look, yeah, you can get into the specifics of the whole plot, but that's best for people to explore because it's out in cinemas now. But look, my reaction to this was that I liked it. I thought this was quite good. It is too long in the sense that there was a point where I thought the film could have ended perfectly, and it felt like this was the perfect way to end it. And then it kept going for a few more scenes, so I was just like, okay, this is too long. You know, like that was my reaction to it. But I really liked Robert Pattinson in it. I thought, yeah, most of the cast were really great, and particularly Paul Dano and Colin Farrell. It's just, they're very kind of over the top and chewing the scenery. So this film is very serious and dark, but it's also can't help but be campy with how just kind of grotesque these characters are. And, you know, back in the day, Christopher Nolan, when talking about The Dark Knight, he wanted to make Heat as a comic book movie. And it feels like that with Matt Reeves. He's looking to the crime thrillers of the 90s, David Fincher with Seven and Zodiac, and really adding that kind of vibe to it. So there's a lot more to say, but I don't want to hog the mic here. But Simon, I mean, I think we're going to take this as read that this was too long for you.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, and two things can be true. Drive My Car at 3 hours can be too short, and The Batman at 3 hours can be too long. But that said, that is all about structure and pace.
Yeah.
It's like I actually did think this was quite a good movie. I really enjoyed a lot of it. It is too long. It's also very overly serious. And I think there were just so many opportunities where I think we need, and Matt Reeves could have, just pierced the bubble a little bit. Just a little wink, a little aside, a little joke. I was actually astounded at how few moments of levity there are in this. Like, it's a pretty oppressively dark film.
Yeah.
Darker than the Dark Knight movies by the length of the Flemington somehow. But what's interesting here is what you've said at the end there, which is that it is paying homage to those crime movies of the 90s. I think you could almost say it's basically a remake of Seven crossed with Zodiac, but with the Batman. And I really appreciated and respected that. But I do think that anyone who likes those films will say, well, they're clearly better than this.
Mm.
You know, it's sort of, it does pull its punches if it's really going for those, you know, psychological serial killer movies. That said, Paul Dano and not the Penguin, what's his name? Colin Farrell. They know what movie they should be in, and they're a lot of fun. You know, I think you need them to be turning it up to 11 to just give the movie that extra oomph. But Robert Pattinson and Zoe Kravitz are really good in this as well. You know, there are a lot of great actors in a beautiful-looking movie that just maybe takes itself a touch too seriously.
Isn't it interesting? Because the criticism of, say, other comic book films, particularly those Marvel films, is like, oh, they're just too stupid, or they're too silly or fantastical or whatever. And the criticism, particularly of like the last few DC films, because they are quite dark and serious, it's like they're too dark and serious, or they need just a little bit of something to take the edge off.
We're professional contrarians. What do you want us to say?
No, it's good. It's good.
Yeah,
you know where I sit on the DC Marvel.
Yeah, of course.
But I mean, it's all a matter of degrees, because, you know, the DC, the previous kind of movies with, you know, Zack Snyder and Joss Whedon were, you know, they're a bit more kind of oppressive. And this is oppressive in a different way. Like, what I really liked about it was that it's sort of it has some really good action sequences, but it's also really not about that. Some of the action sequences are taken in like one shot or kind of like undercut. It's really about the mood and the look and the score. The Michael Giacchino score, I thought, was fantastic in terms of paying homage to all the kind of iterations, the Danny Elfman score from the 1980s movies. But the mood and the tone was what really I loved about the film. But yeah, it is maybe a little bit too much. And it can't help, even though it tries to do something different with the material, it can't help but fall into some of those traps that these movies do, which is like setting things up for another one and all this stuff where I'm just like, okay, look, just can we just stop with this stuff now? Can we start with like trying to set up these universes and going, oh, this is a little Easter egg. Oh, this is a tidbit. It's just like, look,
Were there people that like waited 10 minutes after the credits in the cinema, do you reckon?
Oh, I was long gone, so I have no idea. But I will say there is a, you know, without giving anything away, it definitely does establish, you know, or hint at who the villain in the next film will be. And that was the worst moment of the Matrix. I was like, I cannot believe it.
I agree with you. Without any spoilers, it's just, look, you know, I remember distinctly being in the cinema audience for Batman Begins, and when Jim Gordon goes, there's a bank robber, and he gives the card, and there's a jerk, and everyone in the audience was like, oh, yeah, like this. And I was like, you can't recreate that moment. And you look, sometimes you just look, walk away and just let the movie be the movie. Anyway, the Batman is out now. I think some people might have a hard time with it in terms of what Simon's talking about, that it's too long, too dark, not as action-packed as they would like. But I think other people will really get into the approach of this, and yeah, hopefully this will be the next Batman for some time rather than another actor cast in the next 2 years. So,
all right, let us know if you're going to see this. 0405 921 921.
Hvad betyder ordet hjem for dig?
Hjem er noget, som er trygt.
Kabul, les attaques des mujahideen reprises.
Har du nogensinde fortalt din livshistorie før?
Nej. Vi skal ud. Det er nu. Tsunami to ninja boshi.
We're gonna mosey on over to the Lottery West Film Festival.
That's right. On Monday next week, a new movie plays, as it does every week, and the Film Club have been reviewing the Perth Festival films on Mondays with you, Taylor, and they will again return to talk about this film, but I thought, oh, go on, let's give it a second review, because this is a special movie. It's called Flea, and it is something of a record breaker, because at the Academy Award ceremony coming up, it is up for 3 prizes: Best Animated Feature, Best International Feature, and Best Documentary. It's the first film to go for the triple crown there. And we've seen movies in the last couple of years get 2 nominations for documentary and international film. I'm talking about Honeyland and Collective, movies we really enjoyed here on the squad. But 3 nominations across these categories, it has to be a pretty special movie to notch that. And this one indeed is. It comes from director Jonas Rasmussen, and it's a Danish film, but it's about a friend of his, someone he met in real life as a teenager on a bus at the age of 15, and came to discover that he was a refugee, an asylum seeker in Denmark who had fled Afghanistan. And basically this film is him profiling and interviewing this friend of his, Amin, and Amin reflecting on his life, his you know, period as a young man, or a child really, and then his family having to flee and becoming a refugee. It's all set in the shadow of, or on the eve rather, of his upcoming wedding to his partner Casper. And Amin these days is an affluent man, he's a successful man, and he is looking forward to his marriage. But Casper, his husband-to-be, wants to move to this sort of country home. He wants to live a nice, quiet, ordinary life. And Amin wants that too. But he's sort of reckoning with the survivor's remorse. You know, his family went through so much. They sacrificed so much. Lives were lost. Is it really okay for him now just to live life as an ordinary man? And I think that's such a beautiful and interesting angle for this story of asylum seekers to take, because, yeah, there is this expectation that we, you know, in Western society put on refugees and asylum seekers, saying, well, now you have to live a more than meaningful life, or now you have to do something grand. And Amin feels that as well, but what if he just wants to marry the love of his life and live a quiet life? So that's all very profound. Why this film is animated? Because I can appreciate some people going, a documentary that's animated, it's a bit like putting a hat on a hat. But ultimately, it's to protect Amin's identity. So that's not his real name, and this isn't what he looks like. But the director, Jonas Rasmussen, is able to use Amin's real voice in interviews and then illustrate both his current life in this very, very beautiful, almost cartoonish animation style, and then reflect on his past in a more impressionistic, almost frenzied, scribbled style of animation. So, very powerful experience. But Tristan, how did you feel about the marriage of animation and documentary storytelling here?
Yeah, I was pretty receptive to it. I like the look of it. I mean, it does look like, comparisons would be like to Persepolis and kind of graphic novels turned into movies. But I thought it was a great way of trying to convey memory and remembering things, because there are times where things are in sharp detail and then other times where things are kind of foggy and kind of almost like sketches on paper. And I really liked the approach of this. I also liked the whole idea of it starting from one friend telling another, just going into detail about this trauma that he's never really kind of vocalized or aired to someone else, because he's always been scared and traumatized. So, yeah, I found this very moving and very just kind of I appreciate the style and the approach it took, because it made things both kind of relatable and intimate, but also kind of creative and a little bit different than you would expect.
Definitely. And I also want to note here that, you know, we can't leave aside the fact that this is a queer movie ultimately, and it is that interesting sort of confluence of events that, yes, this is a refugee story and it's about a man reckoning with survivor's guilt and remorse, but it's also about a young Afghan man's coming out story and how that is also, his survival is weighing heavily on him, because what would his family think and what would they expect of him, you know, to live life as a queer man in Denmark now? You know, what is he betraying? And it's all handled so movingly and it's very a tender film. There are moments that are very harrowing. And I think, you know, as we know about refugees in Australia currently in hotel detention for obscene amounts of time, and no doubt the horror stories that are going to continue to emerge from Ukraine with many refugees evacuating at the moment, I think it's good to keep all of this in mind, not just the meaningful stories, but also the ordinary stories striving to live an ordinary life, and how that's also completely valid and meaningful too. Taylor, how do you feel about, a refugee story documentary, but it's kind of packaged in this way that's maybe a little bit more accessible or impressionistic?
Yeah, look, I don't think that nominations are necessarily like a signal of a good film, but like to have three nominations in three very different categories is obviously a sign of something quite extraordinary. This looks really lovely and, like you said, really accessible as well. I'd be really curious to go and see this one and implore people to go and do it while they can during the season.
Well, it's 89 minutes. You can watch it twice before you even get to the worst scene of the Batman film. And it is playing at the Perth Festival next week. The Oscars are next month, Tristan? I don't know when they are.
It's the end of this month.
So no doubt when... and it may not win any of those awards, and that would be perfectly fine. As you say, Taylor, it's not necessarily a mark of a good film. The film is a mark of a good film, and this is definitely one that is very special, very moving, and I would say definitely should be on your list to check out, whether it is at the Perth Festival season or whether it gets a cinema release after that or goes to streaming. Flea, F-L-E-E, is one you definitely want to see.
Are there many other animated documentaries that you can think of?
Yeah, well, Waltz with Bashir is sort of the one of the key benchmarks in the genre. That was 2008, I think, and it was nominated for Best Documentary but not Best Animated Film at the Oscars that year. Really powerful movie as well. That movie, correct me if I'm wrong, Tristan, was rotoscoped, where it was filmed, but they paint over the frames.
Beautiful.
They don't do, and it was beautiful. It was a bit like Waking Life and some of the Richard Linklater films, like A Scanner Darkly. This movie isn't rotoscoped. Rasmussen is actually, his background is in radio. So a lot of the interviews he does with Amin, Amin's lying down in an empty space. And that's a trick he learned from doing podcasting and such. So it makes sense how he's brought that to life through animation. But yeah, a very distinctive looking film, even with Persepolis and Waltz with Bashir in the inspirational category.
So good. Before we let Movie Squad sign out for the week, Chow has emailed in the Batman, the animated series. There was no title card given. is the best voice of Batman. It's Kevin Conroy.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Mark Hamill also as the Joker.
Yeah,
yes. And both of them in Mask of the Phantasm, which was a film adaptation or extension of the animated series. So, yeah, if you want another Joker in your catalogue that you didn't yet have, Mark Hamill's is a good one.
Yeah, you can't keep a good Joker down. Movie Squad, Tristan and Simon, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be back again next Friday morning.
Well, there you have it. Two recommendations, maybe one more strongly than the other. I mean, I was just thinking when I was talking about Flea during that review, Simon, I couldn't help but start to get emotional and start to get tear up. It is definitely a very emotional and sensitive, I think, and tender, the words that you used is very accurate. One that I would really ask people to kind of check out because it does kind of... I mean, some of these things that we take so much for granted and that, it's just a very, very, very good film and a very good way to kind of understand at least one person's journey or story in this situation.
Definitely. And tearjerker is a bit of a dirty word. Yeah, you know, we think about manipulative movies, but I suppose movies are meant to manipulate you, right? So, you know, to get its intended effect. And I think that this, a bit like Drive My Car last week, or rather a couple of weeks ago, they're just very moving movies. What I will say is this also has one of the best Daft Punk drops I've ever heard in a film. So, you know, what we're talking about with the Batman, you know, it was all dark, no light. Flea has some nice light and shade to it, you know, so I think it's a fully realised experience.
Yeah. So Flea it's out in cinemas as part of Perth Festival at the time of recording, but I'm sure that... if you're listening to this later in the future, you can track it down on direct-to-streaming services. And, it's been so great to talk about movies with you, Simon, and with Taylor.
Of course. The steward of the good ship movie squad. How about that?
I was trying to compare Taylor to, a character from Batman. I mean, the Detective Gordon. I don't know. It's a tough one to crack.
Well, she flicks the signal. And we turn up every Friday morning.
That's right. It's funny that with the Batman universe, there's like so many villains that people actually, I think just generally, non-comic book fans would know. Like, it's like Joker, Penguin, Riddler.
Two-Face.
And then I think the list gets a little bit, and so...
Killer Croc.
Is there any ones that you remember that you think are due for the next movie?
Well, it's interesting because even this one and also the Nolan, I think Batman Begins, had Carmine Falcone, who I always think of from the respected Batman comics, you know, like The Long Halloween. Anyone else that I would like to see? There's one that's really stupid. He has a rhyming name. The Batman heads out there are going, oh, how can you not know? I don't know. I would just like to see, you know, like Scarecrow in Batman Begins was such inspired choice. And I do think, well, that was 17 years ago. Why not have another crack at Scarecrow? You know, Cillian Murphy's performance in those films was so good and fun. And I love how he pops up in The Dark Knight Rises as well as sort of an even wilder version that we've seen. But what about you? Are there any other Batman members of the Rogues Gallery?
Well, the ones I always think of, because, you know, with the Batman TV show, it was like they had to fill up, you know, weekly episodes. So they really ran dry through all these like wacky characters. And I always just remember Vincent Price as Egghead. Can they do a dark, gritty version of Egghead? So his full name was Edgar Head, or he.
Edgar Head.
And his abilities are genius level intelligence, various egg themed weapons. So I don't know. Could Matt Reeves do something good there? Maybe we could get,
I'm doing some Googling. There's the ventriloquist and Scarface. Can we get them in there?
Right.
There's Catman.
finally.
Finally released the butthole cut of Catman. And why don't we go with the Gentleman Ghost? That sounds pretty
Gentleman
good.
Gentleman Ghost.
These ideas, we don't need the... We don't, Matt Reeves, we do not need the villain you hint at the end of the Batman. We need Lord Deathman or Onomatopoeia.
Yeah, I think it's time that we just branch out of the ones that everyone knows and let's invest in Onomatopoeia and get into the backstory and possibly get a great chiseled looking actor to don some prosthetics and look malformed or something, I don't know, to look disturbing. Anyway,
We digress.
Yeah, we digress. Well, thank you for listening, and thank you for enjoying the Movie Squad podcast. We'll be back next week with more movie reviews and movie chat. Please, if you know someone who likes fun, casual movie chat from Simon and me on RTRFM, please share the podcast. Please rate and review it on iTunes and wherever you can. It would be great to get the word out. And always get in touch on the Facebook, Movie Squad RTRFM at Facebook. And we'll catch you next time at the flicks.
I'm giving this in.